At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 169 of your favourite Formula One show. Yes, we return this weekend to discuss all of the action from the Japanese Grand Prix, and we've got to be quick about it because apparently Jamie is getting raided by the police.
Classically, happen to live in a city centre and there's always sirens going past. And I might need one by the end of this because I'm on death's door this week. I'm not making a fuss, I'm making a point, to quote Jeremy Clarkson. That's, you might be able to tell that I can't really speak very well. So that always bodes well for a podcast. Yes, so forgive me if there's a lot of sneezing and blowing my nose.
I would try and edit it all out, but we'll wait and see as to how we get on. But of course, yeah, if you aren't already, please do make sure you get yourself subscribed as well. We ticked over 500 subs inside the last week or so, Jamie. So a massive thank you to everyone that is still providing us with support. We are currently on 512 subscribers, so we're almost caught up, Jamie. We haven't done an update recently.
We're 40 away.
It's going to happen sooner rather than later, ladies and gents. But yeah, moving though towards the Japanese Grand Prix, obviously for us, European fans, it was still earlier than maybe many would have liked. But once again, shout your hate towards Jamie in the comments because you thought. Because you thought you had better things to be doing this weekend. I actually got up for the race.
Did you stay up?
Might have fallen asleep later on, but it's fine. I saw all the important bits.
I was sleeping on the floor in a sleeping bag at 6 a.m. on Sunday morning, with a towel as a pillow, and I woke up feeling like death. Not because of the stag do, but I was at a stag do. So there you go. I caught a virus because of cold and inhaling bonfire smoke. I had about 3 shots worth of alcohol, so leave me alone.
Jamie, this is unheard of.
Unprecedented.
I went on a lad's holiday with you last year, and I don't think you had 3 drops of alcohol in the near week we were there. This is incredible scenes. No wonder you don't feel
straight,
well.
Yeah, straight on the Pendennis whiskey. It was lovely.
Nice. Are you still hungover, I bet, after your 3 shots 2 nights ago?
My nose is making me feel like I am. But fair thankfully enough. Not.
I don't quite get how your nose makes you feel hungover, but I guess we deal with hangovers slightly differently.
Cloudy head. Mostly from the Lemsip and the paracetamol. we move.
Jamie might fall asleep halfway through, and it'll be incredible viewing. Let's talk, though, obviously, before we got to Japan. Of course, we did a preview last week. We covered pretty much everything that we kind of knew about at the time, didn't we? Whether Daniel Ricciardo was going to keep his seat, whether, you know, a few other bits and pieces going on in the world of Formula One. We did get some sad news coming into the weekend, didn't we, Jamie? Yuki Tsunoda, bless him, confirmed, or I say sad, it was actually quite happy in the end, but he confirmed it was nice to go back to Japan in April because he gets to see all the lovely trees. Which he doesn't normally get to see.
Yeah, Japanese cherry blossom is on point. It looked great. And some of the photos that came out from the different teams. I know Haas released a really cool one where like they shot through some cherry blossom branches at the track.
Oh, suits the colour of their car as well.
It does. So I'm happy. I'm as happy as Yuki Tsunoda is. Although it doesn't sound like it.
No, bless him. And the other big one, wasn't it? Was, of course, after so many people hurled abuse at Williams' Formula One team, it was confirmed that now, so for the whole timeline of events, ladies and gents, Alex Albon broke a chassis in Australia, got Logan Sargeant's car. Many people thought that wasn't very fair. It's now been confirmed that, obviously, they couldn't repair the chassis before, I believe, China. It might have been later than that, wasn't it? Actually, it might have been Miami or even when we returned to Europe. Williams don't quite know yet. They can't find it on the Excel spreadsheet. But now it's been confirmed that now Logan Sargeant has to deal with this broken chassis until they get a new one. So he's stuck now with the broken chassis as Albon can write cars off and get away with it. We spoke about it all last week. I personally don't feel like my thoughts and feelings have changed on the matter at all.
No, not particularly.
It's Formula One at the end of the day. It's a brutal sport, and unless you're doing better than your teammate, he's going to get preferential treatment. Unless, of course, exactly. Your name is Lance Stroll.
Exactly. And also, Sargeant didn't do himself any favours by crashing in practice. So
no, he didn't.
He did his best to write off another chassis for Williams.
He tried.
Yeah, thankfully for them, it was able to be fixed this time. Nothing was actually damaged at all. The chassis was fine. But Williams are going through parts like no tomorrow. For a team that isn't really near the budget cap, that's quite difficult.
No, they're up near the budget cap nowadays. James Vowles wants them to be allowed to
Spend more money, doesn't he?
Yeah,
but
he
even
wants
to
spend facilities.
Repair damage for a team that is operationally pretty poor is not very helpful.
Williams, I think the best thing to say are currently they're going through parts like they've gone on their Excel spreadsheet and are just holding delete and random arrow keys. That's what they're doing.
Yes. That's exactly what they're doing.
But I mean, yeah, obviously, free practice, of course. Japan's quite a I really like it. I mean, we both like it as a circuit. Yes, maybe I've gone on the record in saying I think Fuji deserves a shot at hosting the Japanese Grand Prix again. I will die on that hill. but of course, this place has something that Fuji doesn't have, and that is an absolute no room for error, which we like on a Formula One track, don't we, Jamie?
Yes, totally, because the drivers should be on the edge of like performance the whole time, and when you're on the edge of the performance, there should be a consequence for messing up, whether that's a barrier in Monaco or grass and gravel here. Or, yeah, it's a shame when you go to places like Bahrain even, or like, I was going to say Cheddar for a second, they're definitely not. Places with these huge, huge runoff areas where like you can just make a little mistake and it's absolutely fine. It's a bit of a shame. So yeah, we saw Logan Sargeant get punished for it, and we saw a number of other drivers making mistakes in practice, going onto the grass, and obviously that ruins a whole lap rather than just getting, you know, the time deleted. You've got to wait a minute until you find out who's where. No, just stick grass on the edge of the track, please.
Exactly. Formula One needs to, you know, gravel traps and grass are the key. So I think we both argue, wouldn't we, that this is very much kind of one of Formula One's best driver's circuits, isn't it?
I think so, yeah, for sure.
And that would explain why, as soon as we moved into Q1, Lance Stroll got knocked out.
Yes, not the best look, especially as I think in Q1, wasn't Alonso second or fourth or something like that?
I believe he was second in the end in Q1.
Yeah, while Stroll is chilling in 16th and knocked out by, yeah, a bunch of people in F1.5. So, yeah, that was not the great look from Lance Stroll, especially when Aston Martin brought in some upgrades. They had enough for both cars, but they wanted to like face off against each other. So they gave Stroll the new parts in practice one. Alonso only got them in practice two. So Alonso basically had an hour less time in the car and still dropped like almost a second.
Near enough a second, yeah. Wasn't it? In qualifying. I mean, to be fair, it's always what we say with qualifying basically now follows a routine, doesn't it? Q1 and Q2 is obviously just the back marker five teams go out, unless, of course, Lance Stroll, which happens more often than not, bottles it, and that then means someone from those back marker teams gets to make it into Q3. Jamie and I were talking about it pre-show. This, I think, is probably one of the quintessential problems that Formula One has at the moment with the amount of predictability. Even qualifying, which in previous years has often been sometimes the most exciting part of a Grand Prix weekend. Even last year, that was the case on a lot of occasions because you had Ferrari that were able to match Max over one lap and that kind of thing. Now even that feels quite predictable for the most part, doesn't it?
Yes, especially like the first 40 minutes, you could basically switch on for Q3 and kind of predict at least 9 of the 10 drivers that are going to be there. Unless Lewis Hamilton does a Melbourne again. It's a bit of a shame, but the problem is I do quite like watching both the fields battle within themselves, but it's a shame when one of them is battling for P10 or P11 at best.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of good, isn't it, that Lance Stroll kind of does a charity service in the idea that if you do finish best of the rest, you're likely to get a point.
Unless you're Joe, but he got screwed over in Bahrain.
Well, yeah, unless you're Joe in Bahrain. Or, of course, last weekend where last race even, where a couple of them got a chance, obviously with Max and Lewis having issues.
Yeah.
But yeah, out in Q1... And Russell, yeah, forget about that. Out in Q1, of course, Lance Stroll, as we said, Gasly, Magnussen, Sargeant, and Zhou Guanyu. And this was another point that Jamie and I were talking about before the show. Zhou Guanyu at the moment is just... I mean, Bahrain was good. We said that at the time. Bahrain, he really delivered. Since then, it's been him and Sargeant on the back row of the grid every time, I believe.
Pretty much, yeah. And I don't know what it is. I think he didn't have the updated nose that Bottas had. I think I need an updated nose, to be honest, this podcast. But yeah, that was a shame for him. But I think he's got to pick it up quite soon. We obviously know what's going on with Audi coming to that team. Well, title sponsoring it next year and then coming in properly the year after.
I believe it's title sponsoring 2 years.
Ah, there you go.
I think Stake have got a two-year deal.
So... yes, he has to pick it up, otherwise he's not going to be able to find a seat, I don't think, which is a bit of a shame. But he was screwed over in a race because he didn't get a chance to do anything because the team is not helping him out with like reliability and slow pit stops. And yeah, he's not had a clean race.
Sauber had another slow pit stop?
To be fair, by their 2024 standards, it wasn't that slow. Very low bar, but yeah.
It is shocking, isn't it? I think what's more shocking, though, is, again, a stat that I gave Jamie pre-show. Logan Sargeant, so far in his F1 career, has never gone out in Q1 more than 6 times in a row, which he's kind of, let's be fair, he's kind of the benchmark for a poor driver at the moment, isn't he? Or a driver that is likely to be dropped soon.
Yeah.
It should be Lance Stroll, but there we are. Zhou Guanyu is currently on a 7 streak. Of being knocked out in Q1. Mm. Whereas Bottas seems to reliably, at the very least, be on the precipice or making Q2. I wonder whether there's been an element from Sauber, Kick, Stake, whatever we're calling them, basically going, look, it's a shootout between you two this year. And whether that's been Bottas has just decided he's going to actually try, whether that's been an element of Bottas maybe not sharing as much data anymore... At the end of the day, Zhou is not delivering to the same level as Valtteri, is he? Which, of course, is difficult, because Bottas, you know, people do like to absolutely poo on him. But he is, what, a 9- or 10-time Formula 1 Grand Prix winner?
I think it was. Indeed. And also, he was an excellent qualifier at Mercedes. That was probably fantastic. His strength. Yeah. Like, he was only ever, really, 3/10 on average, probably, off Hamilton. Who's, one of the greatest qualifiers of all time.
Yeah, I would say their average probably across, 5 seasons together? I haven't got the data for it, but I would assume it would be about 2-3 tenths. It can't be much more than that. It wouldn't surprise me if it was even closer than that either. That's how good Bottas was over one lap. Had the racecraft of my grandmother, but there we are. That was always a shame.
Yeah, but Sauber really aren't helping either driver out this year because their car is shocking. Especially in quali pace. I think race pace is maybe slightly better than a few others, but yeah.
It seems, doesn't it, with the backmarker group, that the qualifying pace seems to be further spread than the race pace between them all, doesn't it? They all kind of have their own strengths and weaknesses at the moment. But yeah, moving into Q2, though, that one was a bit less surprising, wasn't it? Of course, we did have the fight for who would make it into Q3, but really all weekend long, Yuki Tsunoda was a cut above the rest of that backmarker group, wasn't it? But
to be fair, I think the RB is slightly better than the other 4 teams.
The RB definitely is the strongest qualifier out of that lot.
And a strongest racer, doubt about it. I would say.
I think the advantage again is a lot less. It probably is still, but I think Haas, when they get it hooked up, have got a chance. I think Williams, when we go to a track that will suit their car more, should have a good chance.
If I had to order them, it would definitely be RB, Haas, Williams. Wait, who am I forgetting?
Alpine.
Oh yeah, they're last probably.
Yeah.
So what was I saying? RB, Haas, Williams, Sauber, Alpine. It's probably the race pace order. Anyway,
I feel like Alpine have the most potential in that group. Yeah, but I would.
Well, they should.
Yeah, you'd hope so.
Yeah.
But yeah, that then meant, obviously, Ricciardo, he did actually a pretty good job in qualified, didn't he? I saw way too many Australians saying that he's back, and they can't wait to see what he does on Sunday. That'll be discussed in a minute.
Still lost to Tsunoda in qualifying, but, you know, he did wasn't still, embarrassed.
But he was right there, so, wasn't he, this time?
Yes. Yeah, indeed. So we got into Q3, and actually, it wasn't a whitewash by Max Verstappen. Arguably it was, because he set 2 times good enough a pole, but I was very impressed that Perez was so close. I actually thought for a second Perez might have had him, but no. But 0.06, not bad at all. And I wonder, yeah, that probably gave Perez a little confidence boost, and obviously he's fighting for a seat for staying at Red Bull next year. So that's probably a little confidence booster, because he was obviously a bit further back in Melbourne than he would have liked. And yeah, we'll see. We'll see for the next few races. But if he can keep that up, I don't see why Red Bull wouldn't keep him.
Do you want to know the maddest thing about that for Sergio Perez?
Okay.
Do you know when his last front row grid start was?
Was it like Italy or something?
No.
Was it?
No,
it wasn't
Jamie.
Baku.
No, Miami last
Miami,
year.
Miami when he got pole. Oh,
Miami dear. Last year was the last time Sergio Perez started on the front row. It has nearly been an entire year. Where
and
his
Max
teammate
has
won
23 of those races.
Every race apart from 2 in that time. I mean, yeah, that Red Bull, don't get me wrong, is not as strong over qualifying as it is in a race. But, yeah, the fact... Perez, don't get me wrong, in terms of just looking at this weekend, he did a fantastic job in qualifying. And as you said, he lost a bit of time in Sector 3 on his final run, because I was with you, I thought he might actually do this. But everyone seemed to be losing to Max in that final sector, so I don't know if he just had a bit more top-end speed or what was going on with the setups. But yeah, Perez was super... I mean, to be within a tenth of Max Verstappen here is always pretty good. Yeah. Must also be said, though, generally speaking, not actually one of Max's best tracks, is it? It is in no. The advantage usually here has been less than it's been in a lot of other places. Albon, if I remember correctly, in 19,
you're right,
tied him.
He did, and Max only beat him on because he set the time first.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously he didn't race here for a couple of years, but then he's only had, what, Perez was his teammate in 22, 23,
well,
and 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would have to look up what the times were then, but certainly 2019, he wasn't on it compared to Albon, or maybe Albon was on it. Who knows?
Well, so I just don't think it's a track. It doesn't suit Max's driving style, I think, Suzuka.
No.
Particularly because he's probably a bit too over the limit. then again, I'm saying this, of course, he's still bagged pole, and of course, as we know, he still won the race. Spoiler alert,
yeah,
for anyone that
he's
didn't
only,
know that.
He's only run 1:22 of the last 24. That's pretty poor going.
Exactly. but it says levels, doesn't it? The fact that the idea that it's not a Max Verstappen track when he still takes pole and wins, but it's just that his teammate is actually able to get a look in at him, I think is the point we're trying to make, or the point I'm trying to make before the Verstappen fans hate on me.
Other thing from Q3, everyone was really, really tight between, what, 3rd and 9th, really, wasn't it? 3rd to 7th was split by a tenth of a second between, it was in the end, Norris, Sainz, Alonso, Piastri, and then the Mercedes and Leclerc were left, what, 7th, 8th and 9th?
Well, Leclerc only got one run.
Yeah. Which has obviously hampered him a bit, but it wasn't the magical Leclerc Q3 lap that we've been so used to seeing. And yeah, he was a tenth off Sainz, and that was 4 positions, which is pretty mad. Really, that battle, in qualifying especially, is very tight.
But as we said a couple of minutes ago, in the way that the backmarker group obviously kind of spread out in qualifying and kind of accordion back together in race pace, the front group seem to do the opposite, don't they? Everyone's right on each other over one lap, and then you get into a race and kind of the pace splits out a bit.
It strings out and everyone ends up where they should, apart from Alonso. But yeah, we'll get into that.
Exactly. Well, let's move on then into the Grand Prix, shall we? Obviously, we all got up nice and early, 6 a.m, unless your name's Jamie, because he thinks he's better than the rest of us.
Wow.
And immediately after we hyped up Danny Ric for doing well in qualifying, I think he got away with this one far too leniently. He just took Alex Albon out. Simple as, in my eye.
Yeah, straight up. Just lack of awareness. Didn't know there was a car on his outside into turn 3. And Albon did his best to avoid it in the end, but couldn't. And it was completely Ricciardo's fault, and both of them out. And they throw a load of tyres around. So, red flag straight away. Yeah. So, if you got up at nice and early, you know, 5 to 6 UK time, then it was another 20-minute wait before the race actually got going.
I tell you what as well, I'm going to have my Formula One was better back in the day rant. No way should that have been a red flag either.
It's mostly because of the barriers, wasn't it?
But it was just tyres.
Yeah, but then what else do you do? Because they're all over.
Put them back together under a safety car.
I feel F1 has thrown red flags out way too early.
Has steered into this, well, we can't have laps under a safety car because that's not entertaining. I wouldn't even, actually, to be fair, the best case scenario would be safety car laps, and then the safety car comes back in and they do another grid start. That's what I want to see.
Oh, second grid starts are so novelty, though, aren't they?
They are, completely.
But especially when you have multiple red flags in one race, it proper annoys me.
Yeah.
I think that was arguably, as an F1 purist, that's one of my least favourite rule changes in the recent years.
I quite like it, to be fair.
They basically realised after Italy, wasn't it, 2020, it's like, red flags make a race really exciting. Yeah. Let's just do it all the time. And then the race after Mugello, you had 3 red flags.
Yeah.
It's like, what the heck is going on?
It's a little bit odd, isn't it? But yeah, going back to the Ricciardo thing, now I can already see the comments saying, but he had Stroll on his inside. No, Stroll wasn't there anymore. Yeah. Ricciardo just swung across Alex Albon, who had a lot of the car alongside. Absolutely deserved space. And if that was me, possibly could have been some penalty points on his license. But he got away with it. I can understand why it was deemed a racing incident as well, to be fair.
Yeah, it is lap one.
But it was still, from a driver with that much experience, sloppy. And, fun fact, Williams, they reckon they've damaged the chassis because of it.
Yeah. Yeah, not a good time to be James Vowles right now. But they've got 2 weeks to fix it, so maybe they'll have a go.
Not going to hold my breath. I reckon they'll have 2 slightly damaged chassis ready for Shanghai. But yeah, obviously, like we said, we got a red flag. That was about 20 minutes. I really did the nodding dog trying to stay awake. But I did make it to the second start. And yeah, obviously, it was back to the normal grid order, wasn't it?
No, it was taken.
Because originally it wasn't, and then it was again.
Yeah.
Which meant that Jamie's favourite, Nico Hülkenberg, was going to start P10. Points possible, yeah. Jamie?
There we go. It was all looking good. It was looking great until the lights went out and he got anti-stall. I haven't looked if it was his fault or the team's fault yet, but
it was whatever.
It probably was his. You don't often see anti-stall caused by the car unless you drove it hungry. Yeah,
that was also his.
No, it wasn't. Still not over that. That was a P5 for the taking.
I'm not in a race. It wasn't. It might have been a couple of points, yes, but it wasn't going to be that.
Yeah. So that ruined everything. He went from, what, 10th to 17th or something like that. Basically last of the drivers running. Also making contact with the Alpines. But Ocon was annoyed. Gasly got damaged. But they probably all hugged at the end of it. It's fine.
Well, I think at the end of the day, it makes very little difference down at Alpine, doesn't it? Now. But yeah, that was one of those ones. I'm trying to remember this from being very tired.
It was Gasly coming
time.
Down the middle. Ocon was on the outside.
Ocon, it was another example in my mind of Ocon probably squeezing his teammate far more than he needed to.
Don't
get me wrong. I don't think he deserves a penalty or anything, but that was one of those ones where you're kind of like, you know, both of you at the moment, you're going to be picking up scraps. You've got about another foot and a half on your outside there.
Yeah.
It's lap one. Maybe. Just give him a bit of room, mate. Come on.
Yeah, because Gasly had another car on his inside that was squeezing him too, so...
Exactly. Don't get me wrong, never in a million years is that a penalty to Ocon or anything like that. But it's probably more to the fact that Ocon's got a reputation for doing this more than anything else.
Yeah, I think. It won't help him.
Exactly. But then, of course, you know, after the highs of Australia and the unpredictability, Red Bull came back and just drove off. And we never really saw them again, did we?
Yeah, not massively. Max had his customary 4 or 5 second lead, and Perez actually put a few seconds on the Ferraris too. So, well, it was McLaren of Norris, wasn't it, at the beginning? So yeah, that was it for, you know, unless there's any reliability, then we're going to see a 1-2.
I still think Suzuka needs a second DRS zone down pass 130R.
Speed.
130R DRS zone. Only for the Brave. Would that happen?
I don't know.
Probably not.
It'd be but funny.
I'm staggered. I could be wrong by saying this, but I'm staggered they didn't try it again with the really high downforce cars of 2017 through 2021.
It just feels like you're asking for a massive crash. Do you remember when they put it at turn one at Silverstone at Abbey 1 year?
Yes.
And Marcus Ericsson almost like died in the race.
He didn't almost. He span off.
Yeah, he had a massive crash.
Well, it's just like... I think my point with that is then, close your DRS when you're going through 130R. Like I
what, but leave it an option for the drivers who are brave enough?
Yeah.
That's a terrible idea, because they'd all leave it they'd all leave it open and all of them would crash.
Well, they wouldn't all crash though, would they? Because if you see someone crash in front of you, you go, oh, actually, maybe that's not a good idea.
Maybe.
I wonder actually whether with it, something like that... No, because it used to be the way in 2011, wasn't it, when you could use DRS everywhere. It wasn't
everywhere.
I did wonder for a second whether it was a bit like the Monaco tunnel. What, did we ever find out why you couldn't use DRS in the Monaco tunnel?
Just dangerous. It was high speed, and if you crash in a tunnel, it's an absolute nightmare to recover the cars. So
was that the only reason why?
Pretty much, yeah, because they were just worried people were going
to
crash.
It wasn't anything to do with air pressure or anything like that, no?
No, I don't think so.
No, because I was going to say maybe it was similar, obviously, going over the bridge here, but of course I don't
Because back
that
in those
difference.
Days, in 2011, you'd have to brake for 130R, wouldn't you, slightly? Or was it a slight lift?
No, it was flat still, surely.
Because I remember on the game...
Been flat forever.
I swear you couldn't use DRS at 130R in the game.
Oh, probably maybe you couldn't use DRS, but it was a flat-out corner.
And same with Eau Rouge, they wouldn't let you use it there. But
wait, which game are you on about? 2011?
2011, 2012, yeah, when you could use the DRS everywhere.
Oh, no, you absolutely could still. You absolutely could, you just wouldn't.
We'll go that test also it. Matt will do some research.
Yeah, I will do.
Yeah.
I will do.
If I was on a wheel, I'd have spun out, but controller's got that extra traction. So.
No, not on 2011, 2012. You needed the sense. Well, 2011, yeah, was a pad game, but you needed the sensitivity
right.
still.
We need to get back on topic here.
We have very much gone on our end. Where were we?
Where were we?
Yeah, I think the big saving grace for this Grand Prix, though, wasn't it? Was the fact that the teams made it a bit interesting, not by on-track battling necessarily, but just all the weird and wonderful strategies.
Yeah, and that was a benefit of the red flag, I think, because obviously they do a million simulations of a 57-lap race. Suddenly you make it a 55-lap race, and
it's
no one really knows what's best. Oh, sorry. There you go. Take two laps off the end. And everyone's kind of in the dark on strategy, so people were trying different things. You had the two Mercedes and Leclerc went long on their first set of tyres, and yeah, the Red Bulls and Sainz and others did. Sorry about to sneeze, it's really bad. Take over.
Sainz obviously went a little bit shorter, with Checo and Lando kind of more obviously on the obvious two stop strategy, more orthodox. But then we had a bizarre little moment, didn't we, where five cars from Bottas backwards all just decided to pit at exactly the same time.
Yeah. I wonder if they all said, like... I wonder, like, do you think they said, like, follow him in? It was basically... Bottas was training everyone after... This was for stop number two. Bottas had undercut a bunch of cars. Was running in a net P10 once everyone pitted.
I think everyone was told to undercut the car in front.
All at the same time. And
all at the same time.
So five cars pit, and Bottas with a customary, 5 second pit stop already from Sauber, trying to be safe and not get cross-threaded wheel nuts, ended up going from 10th to 14th behind all of them, apart from one. So that was clever, and ruined his chance of points, which was a shame.
As has ruined every chance of Bottas points so far this year, isn't it? Through
yes.
I don't know. Apparently, and I thought this wasn't true, but apparently each team can develop their own wheel gun for their own thread and bearing. I always thought that was homologated. Like, because obviously the tyres are.
Because obviously the tyres are homologated. There must be some sort of joint between the tyre and the rim.
Well, it has to be, otherwise the rim would fall off.
Yeah, exactly. So that must be the same. So at what point does it become independent? Like, does
and
a team take over?
Why would it be independent? Surely, surely a company could go around to every team going, we've developed this fantastic wheel locking system. It'll take you half a second to get a wheel off and back on. Everyone should just use it.
Yeah. Cause it just,
have we
I
got
guess...
our $1 million business idea? Who knows?
We should
or are
do
we
it.
Just wrong?
we could just be wrong, but we should do it regardless.
Fantastic. We'll get VIP hospitality to every single Grand Prix forever. Yes. We'll do, imagine that, no wheel live at track every single weekend. Fantastic.
Oh,
fantastic.
We love it. We'll get the studio one day.
We will. We'll rent out the Sky Studio when they get with it quite soon. Yeah, Leclerc, though, obviously on his long stretch, he did get between the Red Bulls temporarily, didn't he? And then inevitably, because Leclerc is either basically the second coming of, I don't know. He's either fantastic or he's not. Is where I'm getting at.
Yeah.
He then immediately bottled it, didn't he?
Yeah, he lost the position to Perez. Max was already gone, so only Perez got through at Degna 2, but that re-established Red Bulls 1-2 and they never looked back. So, yeah, it was interesting to have this mix, but eventually it played out. So it basically meant you had cars battling the whole time. But as we said before, it's a shame. The races are almost like slightly too long, maybe, because everyone by the end of it, I guess it's a Grand Prix, it's meant to, like, it's tradition to have it be 300. Is it 300K? 200K?
300Ks, yeah.
There you go.
Just over.
So I don't really want them to change it, but it's a shame that it practically always plays out the way you'd expect. You know, like if you played a football match for 10 hours, then the better team's always going to win. If you play it for 90 minutes, there's a chance that the worst team snags a result.
Are you condoning sprint racing, Jamie?
Am I condoning sprint racing? I'm probably backing sprint racing.
That's what I meant even, yeah.
Maybe I am. Maybe I've had too many drugs today.
Because yeah. That's basically what you're saying here.
It is.
What sprint races need to be enough that everyone has to make a pit stop.
Yeah, sprint. I want like 60% races.
That would be quite interesting.
Just
although again, it would steer into the idea, of course, that we know what's going on for Sunday. But it would be quite interesting,
yeah.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, as you said, though, kind of by the end of the race, wasn't it? Everyone basically ended up pretty much where you would expect them to be. Leclerc was really hanging on towards the end, but of course that then fell apart. Sainz then would get through. And it would. It seems like Ver per Sai is now the new Hanbot Ver, isn't it? But
yeah,
fair play Carlos Sainz. He's just living
Carlos
his best life.
Has had a podium in every race that he's entered.
Yeah, madness. Every race that he's finished. I would assume he entered technically in Jeddah.
Oh, I suppose so. Every race he had, it wasn't.
Every race he started, yeah.
Yes, which is very good going, considering last season he was definitely the number two Ferrari, other than a few races after the summer break, wasn't it? But yeah, he's doing a great job.
Yeah,
and a couple of good moves as well. Overtaking Norris was impressive. And yeah, it was a shame for Lando, because I think he's probably getting a bit done, that McLaren is just a little step back from Ferrari, so they're kind of in no man's land if they have a good race behind the Ferraris but ahead of the Astons and Mercedes, or Alonso and the Mercedes, sorry. Yeah, so that left us with a Repo 1-2 with Carlos Sainz on the podium for the third race out of four, which is good going for him. Charles Leclerc the next up on the one stop, Lando Norris on two. I do think McLaren probably were a bit passive on their strategy with
Norris. McLaren threw away an opportunity here, I feel. Or at least the potential of an opportunity, wasn't it?
Yeah, they basically pit him early to cover something that wasn't really worth covering. And then it was obviously not an ideal strategy. So that was a shame. Alonso did well, P6, ahead of both the Mercedes and Oscar Piastri, who had a bit of a shocker, really, by his high standards for a driver of his youth.
Yeah, he got a little bit screwed over by McLaren's passiveness, didn't he? And George Russell attempting scary things right towards the end. Although that wasn't actually what made him lose the place.
No, because Russell didn't. He had to cut the chicane, but kept the place because Russell obviously forced him off. And that was...
It was more the fact he kept his wheels alongside, wasn't it? Because cutting the chicane after you get forced off nowadays is
still
a reason to give up the place.
But Piastri was definitely ahead.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying he should have had to give that up.
And yeah,
Russell did barge him off.
The one place, well, Lewis Hamilton's P9, is it he finished ninth already this season once? Once or twice?
Seventh and eighth, I think, in the opening two.
Was he not ninth in Jeddah, behind Behrman and
Senna? It might have been seventh and ninth, actually, yeah.
Not great.
It was the worst ever start to his Formula 1 season.
To be fair to him, he has overtaken Lance Stroll in the championship, so...
Woo!
That's pretty good. And then Yuki Tsunoda picking up that 1 point that was on offer because Stroll had an absolute shocker. Actually did finish, but just finished P12. Yes. Shout out to Tsunoda. He did a couple of great moves around the outside of turn six before Dunlop. One of them on Hülkenberg on awfully dead tyres on a one stop. But the other one on Williams, I think it was. I think it was Albon. No, he was out. It must have been Sargent. Yeah, quality stuff from Tsunoda. And picking up that point. And I think he will really be on his own in the championship by the end of the season, just picking up these results.
He'll kind of be where Albon was last year.
Yeah, where he's king of the midfield and then everyone else is picking up scraps.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's... I mean, I'm going to say it. Tsunoda was my driver of the day. You know, really good, solid result all weekend. And, you know, yeah, there's a little bit of biasness and obviously he scored points at home, but he scored points at home. And I think, you know, he was, again, kept everyone else kind of in that second group at arm's length back. And also meant that Stroll couldn't score any points either, which was hilarious, the radio he made at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very good stuff. If you haven't heard it, I would recommend listening to Stroll crying to his engineer about how slow the car is when your teammate's running in sixth.
Don't get... And of course, obviously, I get the Formula 1 drivers have different mentalities to you or I. But if I was Lance Stroll and I was delivering like this every week, I would really struggle to justify why my dad is spending this much money for an F1 team. I would struggle my own moral compass.
It's like, what do you think is going to change for you to win a world championship?
Yeah, or a Grand Prix, for that matter.
Yeah, yeah, who knows? But, yeah, I was just looking at the championship. Ollie Bearman's still 12th.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll end up beating like five of the back markers.
Probably will, to be honest. 6 points is going to be a tall order for the Alpines and the Sauber's if it carries on like this. So, yeah, we'll see. But Tsunoda will probably be a comfortable P11, I would say, by the end of the season.
Yeah, unless we get some big shocks somewhere. Or, again, Alpine finally work out how to build a Formula 1 car.
That's it. I've been trying for 10 years.
Well, yeah. I said Yuki Tsunoda is my driver of the day. Who would you go with, James?
I'll go Tsunoda as well. I'm feeling nice. Let's give it to him.
And I believe I got closer on our Lance Stroll predictions. Because I think I said P10, you said P9.
Yeah, I think I was too generous this time. But
we were both too generous.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You can go for a little P16 in Shanghai.
Wonderful, wonderful. Do we want to do race rating, that kind of thing, or do you want to do the quiz? I believe you've brought a quiz this week.
I have brought a quiz. Speaking of Yuki Tsunoda, we'll go for him, because the quiz is about Japanese Formula 1 drivers who have scored a Formula 1 World Championship point.
Oh.
Or more than one. There are 8. Okay. And you have a minute, starting now.
Takuma Sato, Yuki Tsunoda, Kamui Kobayashi, what's his name? Aguri Suzuki?
Yep.
Yamamoto never did. Ide never did. I feel like I'm forgetting an obvious one. Nakajima.
Which?
Both.
There you go. There's two left and these are quite hard.
Yeah, they're both in the 60s, aren't they? One of them raced at like the Dutch Grand Prix in 1963, I feel.
I'm just seeing a list of names. So one of them raced in the 90s. They both raced in the 90s.
Oh, who am I thinking of?
You got 5 seconds.
It wasn't Inoue or anyone like that. No. Can you give me their initials? I just really want to see if I can. Can you give me the years they raced and for like...
Which teams, maybe? You're quite good in the 90s, aren't you?
I quite like the 90s.
So, one of them... this is a great... This website is awful. 97 to 98 was one of them. I can't tell which team because his website is horrendous.
97? Well, I'm doing a career mode that started in 98. Oh, I can literally see him. What's his name, though?
He scored his points in 97. 98, he raced for Minardi all season.
Yeah, I can see him. Can't remember his name, though. It's not Ricardo Rossi.
Nope, he doesn't sound
Japanese. It's Shinji Nakano.
There you go.
That's annoying. I should have got... I didn't actually know he scored points, to be fair. But that... Oh, yeah, I should have got him.
He raced for Prost in 97, got 2 points.
Oh, dearie me.
And the other one got his points in 1994, racing for Tyrrell. This might be quite hard. I've never heard of this guy, so... Fair play.
I won't be able to get it, but I guarantee you I would have heard of him when you say it.
He is called Ukyo Katayama.
Yes, Katayama, of course.
Of course. I
yeah,
knew
no,
that,
I,
so.
Yeah, I, no, to be fair, I do know him. I do know him. I do recognize the name Katayama because he was not particularly great. I'll take that, 75%. Race predictions, though, Jamie. What were the scores on the doors coming into this one?
The scores were 9 to you and 12 to me.
That's an odd way of doing it, but you've pulled out points this weekend. I went Max, Lando, Leclerc, which netted me 4 points for Max Verstappen.
Yeah, well done. 4 points for saying Max would get pole in the win.
Yep, you said Max, Perez, Piastri, which is gutting for you. Because, actually, no, you would have got this wrong anyway, to be fair. But you tried to put Piastri strategically in.
I did. I really thought
get P3 behind Lando.
I really thought it would be Lando P2, Piastri P3 like last year, but sadly not. But it paid off because I got more points. So
you did. You did. That you opened up your margin.
And you're up to 13.
13. So, a 5-point buffer. Wowee.
Race rating. I feel like a bit of fraud because I didn't watch it. So I struggle to say whether it was better or worse than Melbourne.
I think we gave Melbourne like
6.5 each.
6.5 each. I feel like because of this, I think this probably deserves to be the best race of the season so far, but it probably still doesn't deserve particularly high praise. I'm going to say for that reason then it's a 7.
I'll go 6.5, but I didn't watch
it. You reckon it was no better than Melbourne?
I quite enjoyed getting up from Melbourne. I've only seen the 7-minute highlights of this one, so it's quite hard to tell.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. There you go. And our last little piece of news, which is pretty hot off the press, which I'm sure we'll talk about a lot more next week. South Korea. It looks like they're going to be getting a Grand Prix next year, which is pretty mental.
At Yongam.
Not next year. Oh. Sorry. It looks... Well, I jumped the gun there completely. They've sent a letter of intent to the FIA for a Grand Prix for 2025 or 2026 on a 5-year deal. It's not Yongam coming back.
That's a shame.
Which may be a bit of a shame. But I believe it's going to be another street circuit, probably.
It'll be Seoul Street Circuit, won't it, probably?
It would be quite cool, but maybe not. Well, we don't know much yet, still. But it was just one that we saw very quickly before we dived on. Is there anything else to add, though, Jamie? I think we've done everything.
I think we've done everything.
Wonderful. Thank you all, as always, so much for listening. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure to leave a like, get yourself subscribed. Jamie and I will be back then next week, ready to preview Formula One's return to Shanghai. Yes, a lot of new fans don't know this, but we used to race in China.